We're going to try to finish up Megillas Rus either this week or next week. We'll see how it goes. But we're almost towards the end over here. So we're up on page 1272, it's chapter 4. And I believe we made it up to verse 10. So I think we're on to verse 11 right now on the bottom. So that's right. So verse 11 says, so now just to get back into context, finally Ploni Almoni had refused to redeem Rus and to buy the fields. Boaz stepped in and said, I'll do it. Boaz, at this point, had Ploni Almoni make a commitment through by means of taking off his shoe and lifting it up, which is a commitment in Halacha. And at that point, Boaz became the redeemer, and it was officially sanctioned by Ploni Almoni and those who were watching. So at this point, Boaz turns to the elders, and he tells all the elders who are watching this that they're witnesses to what's happening over here. And Boaz is making a public display out of this, we said, for two reasons. Number one, to show that the halacha is correct. They're allowed to marry a Moavis, a female Moabite convert. And also, Boaz was trying to be sure this marriage was very, very clearly done in an appropriate manner. Ploni Almoni could no longer object to it. And this is he was trying to make a definitive finality on Rus's entire plight. And now Rus, I'm sure, feels great. Finally, you know, her case has been taken up by the Gadol Hador. She's been saved. She's been redeemed. And even though Boaz is possibly subjecting himself to being disrespected because of this drastic move to marry this young Moabite convert, he does what's right and doesn't care about public opinion. So let's go to verse 11. Then all the people who were at the gate and the elders said, we are witnesses. May Hashem make the woman who was coming into your house, like Rachel and like Leah, both of whom built up the house of Israel. May prosper in Ephras and be famous in Bethlehem, in Bethlehem. And verse 12, and may your house be like the house of Peretz, whom Tamar bore to Yehuda, through the offspring which Hashem will give you by this young woman. So the entire nation gives, all those assembled at least, they give a bracha to Boaz. So not only did they agree with what he did, but they gave him a bracha to show that there was a certain excitement here, the anticipation. This is a very special shidduch that's being made. This marriage is going to be a very significant marriage in the history of Klal Yisrael. And people recognize this right now. They recognize the greatness of the act, and they recognize the greatness of Rus, they recognize the greatness of Boaz, and they actually refer to it on par with the marriage of Yaakov and Rachel and Leah. Now, we know Yaakov, Rachel, and Leah, they are the ones who built up Klal Yisrael. These are the, Yaakov is the final of the Avos, Rachel and Leah are the final of the Imahos, through them come the 12 tribes. And this marriage is being put on par with that marriage. Meaning that people understand that this marriage also will be there to be part of the building of Klal Yisrael. This is building a nation, building who we are. From this will come the Malchus, the kingship, and from this will come Mashiach. It's very interesting, the similarities that you see. Because just like Rus came from questionable lineage, you know, she came from Moab, she was a convert. Rachel and Leah as well also had bad yichus, they also had bad lineage. You know, their father was Lavan, you know, the lying, cheating, rotten Lavan as well. And people didn't regard that as a problem because they were great women who themselves, you know, they're very, very righteous, kind women, very upstanding women. So we accepted them to be our imahos. So too Rus, despite her background, because she had such great virtue, she could be accepted to be also the, she's called the Em HaMalchus, the mother of the kingship, of the dynasty. But this couple was made to rebuild and to build Klal Yisrael. Rachel and Leah, it says here, in this bracha being given, it says, Asher Banu Shtehem. Now Rachel and Leah together, they built Beis Yisrael, they built the house of Israel. So Rus isn't building, but she's rebuilding. Way back last year when we started learning Megillas Rus, and we spoke about this time period in history. And right now, historically, was not such a great time for the Jews. They were in the land of Israel, but there was no king. Things were a little bit of an anarchy. People were kind of following their own whims and wishes, and they weren't following what the Chachamim told them to do, what the great leaders told them to do. And this was not a great point in Jewish history. However, this couple, Rus and Boaz, they're the ones who looked at as the hope. They're going to bring forth people who can lead us and bring us back to what we should be. They're going to mend Klal Yisrael. So there's actually a phrase in a Medrash that it says about Rus, Ein ze min ha'amahos, ela min ha'imahos. Rus is not a maidservant, she's one of the imahos, one of the matriarchs. So in Hebrew, those two words actually connect. There's an amah and an imah. Amma is a maidservant, Ima is a mother. So even though Rus came, you know, to Eretz Yisrael as a servant, she was out there in the fields collecting, she was there working amongst all the employees of Boaz, and Boaz recognized she's not an Amma, she's an Ima. This woman is worthy of being the matriarch of Klal Yisrael. And she really rises to that level, rises to that occasion. So let's look in verse 12. We just read it before. In verse 12, it actually compares it then to Tamar and Yehuda giving birth to Peretz. You know, Tamar and Yehuda also was another questionable relationship. It was also a controversial marriage. That's a story in the Chumash where Tamar was actually his daughter-in-law, and her husbands had died, and she dressed up as a prostitute to fool Yehuda into being with her, conceiving a child. So, also a very questionable relationship as well. But we see over here the Megillas Rus, the people recognize that relationship too to be a very, very virtuous relationship. Even though if we looked at it at face value in the Chumash, so you could kind of discard that relationship as being something of that was inappropriate, that was immoral, that was impure. But the people here obviously see this as a very positive relationship. They say, "May your house be at the house of Peretz, and that Tamar bore to Yehuda." So we're mentioning Tamar and Yehuda as a positive union in Klal Yisrael. A very positive relationship. And the truth is, you know, that story needs its own discussion. You know, what happened in that story? Why is it positive? Why is Yehuda not looked at as an immoral person based on this story? But Hashem wanted this. It's very clear if you look at the Midrashim describing the story of Tamar and Yehuda, that Hashem desired they come together. When Yehuda admits that he's the one who made Tamar pregnant, so he says the word Tzadka Mimeni, and the rabbis say, "Mimeni is Hashem speaking." Hashem says, "It's really from me. I orchestrated this event. I wanted it to occur this way." And that's Hashem's way of bringing about Mashiach and David Melch into Klal Yisrael. So it's, you know, it's very hard because on the one hand, Yehuda's sons, you know, they died. They were sinful and they died, and they cannot keep, you know, this line of royalty going. And Hashem had to do it in some sort of backhanded, backdoor method to keep it going. Tamar had to be part of Klal Yisrael. Hashem wanted Tamar to be a mother of King David. Tamar should be somebody who's part of the lineage of the king. And if Yehuda's sons weren't worthy of bringing that about, so Hashem had to have it happen one way or the other. So events were orchestrated in some way that Tamar does become part of this lineage. But all these relationships are interesting that they all seem to be questionable in one way or the other. But yet they bring about David and Melech, they bring about Mashiach. Hashem has his way to bring about the unions that he wants to create the Mashiach. So too Rus. I mean, Rus naturally should not have been part of the Jewish people. Naturally, Rus was, you know, Moabite royalty. She would have stayed in Moab, and she would have, you know, been a queen in Moab or something along those lines. Instead, Hashkacha had it that this family decided to leave Eretz Yisrael in an inappropriate way, in a sinful way, abandoned their people, and somehow they're able to bring back Rus, this special girl, from Moab into the Jewish people. It was something totally unexpected, very big surprise. No one could ever predict such a thing. But yet Hashem's Hashkach always prevails. Now Hashem says, that woman is worthy of being the mother of the king. Hashem's going to bring her into the Jews one way or the other. And that's how it happened also in a very backdoor, surprising way. Through sinners, through a family who they all died because of their sins, but yet they succeeded in bringing back Rus, the Jewish people. So Tamar, Rus, Rachel, and Leah are all kind of put together here in one group. In our minds, Rachel and Leah kind of stand alone, and Tamar and Rus are a very different story. But these are all builders of Klal Yisrael. We need to have the 12 tribes, which are built by Rachel and Leah, and we need to have a king, a leader, which were built by Tamar and Rus, because they're able to bring about the kingship, the Malchus, into Klal Yisrael. The Chazal actually point out that Tamar and Rus are two women who risked their lives, their dignity, and their honor in order to enter into the family of Yehuda. They knew the family of Yehuda was destined for greatness, destined for royalty, and they both did things which may have been perceived as inappropriate. Deep down, they're doing the right thing, but on the outside, it looked inappropriate, and because of that, they're able to enter in to the family of Yehuda, which brought about Mashiach, which will bring about Mashiach. So this really brings about a very central question in general, which it could be we can't talk about too much today, but we'll mention it a little bit, which is, why does Hashem bring about David HaMelech and Mashiach in such questionable methods? I mean, all the relationships that we know in the Torah, I'm leading up to David HaMelech's birth. Many of them have controversy or questions surrounding them. The very first controversy, I guess we can think of, was, you know, Rus came from the family of Moav. Moav was, of course, the son of Lot, which was conceived by his daughter, but Lot with his daughter having a relationship together, conceiving a child. This is after the destruction of Sodom, where Lot's daughters thought the whole world was destroyed and nobody was left besides them and their father. They wanted to carry on the human race. And therefore, they tricked their father into having a night with them, and they conceived the child. So Moav was the child of Lot's oldest daughter with Lot. Incest, a true ancestral relationship. Something which halachically, had they been Jewish, would have been a mamzer. They weren't Jewish, so they're not a mamzer. But a relationship which was forbidden, you know, according to all opinions at that point. That was the very beginning of Rus, dating back to her great-great-great-great-grandfather. After that, you have Yehuda and Tamar, which I mentioned before is also a questionable relationship. Tamar had tricked Yehuda, dressing up as a prostitute in order to seduce him. Then you have the relationship of Boaz and Rus, which again, halachically is totally fine, but people questioned it based on her lineage. She was a Moabite convert. Moabites aren't allowed to marry into the Jewish people. They had to emphasize a new halachic drasha to show this is actually permitted. But that was also a questionable relationship. You then have David HaMelech's birth. You know, David was accused of being a mamzer as a child. People had thought that he was actually born from, I believe, his father and some sort of maidservant or something. Again, the story, the Chazal talk about the story, why there was an accusation like that. It wasn't true. David was a valid, you know, legitimate child. But there was an accusation about David's birth also, which was in question. And then, beyond that, you have the relationship of David and Bathsheba, which brought about Shlomo HaMelech being born. Also questionable. Also, David had to admit to being a sinner in that relationship. So that's already five different links in the chain to Mashiach, which are brought into question, which don't seem to be the way you'd bring about, you know, the world's, you know, greatest leader, the Mashiach. You know, why is it that way? So I think there's two broad answers to this. Each one can deserve its own discussion. I think one answer is the following, that the role of Mashiach is not to be a perfect person. The role of Mashiach is to bring back the entire world to recognize Hashem, which means that Mashiach has to have some connection to sin, to struggle, and to challenge. I mean, if you have somebody that you view as perfect in every way, so it's very nice to know them, they're inspiring, but you can't relate to them. You say, that's not me. You know, I have issues, I have challenges, I'm not as patient and as kind and as careful, and I don't have the same Yiras Hashem, and I don't have the same love for other Jews like this person. It's just not me. And I very much respect them, but I'm not influenced by them because I can't relate. When someone relates to you, you're very influenced by them. Someone you know has been through the same struggles as you, but they overcame those struggles. At that point, you're very inspired because you see this person knows who I am, relates to me, and still shows me how to get through those struggles. So Mashiach is somebody who has to at least come from the stock that understands sin, understands people, has been there, done that, you know, in the world of struggle, in the world of Avera, understands human urges and human follies, human failures. And despite all that, can inspire everybody and bring them back to serving Hashem properly. So Mashiach, he comes from a lineage which very much relates to the human condition and to the failures of human beings. So that's one explanation. The other explanation given, this I guess is a more Kabbalistic explanation, is there's a famous mashal, famous analogy. I don't know the source of it originally, but the analogy is that if you want to transport a precious diamond through dangerous territory, so one way to do it is by putting it in a heavily armed car and locking it up in 10 safes and having armed guards surrounding it. But then everybody knows what's inside that box. And therefore, those people who want to steal that diamond, they will go about trying to steal that diamond. And you know, if it's armed well enough, it'll probably make it through. But even the most heavily guarded museums and banks in history have also been held up and robbed at some point or the other. But the other method you can do is instead of putting the diamond in a heavily armed, you know, vehicle in special boxes with armed guards around it, you could take a dump truck, fill it with garbage, and stick the diamond right in the middle of the garbage. So that dump truck pulling through the dangerous area, no one's going to even have a dream of anything valuable inside the dump truck. So it'll make it right through, no questions asked. So again, this is more of a Kabbalistic thought, but Hashem is trying to bring about Mashiach to the world. And we know that when Hashem brings good things to the world, it's always the forces of evil that come to stop them. Now Hashem designed it that way, but there's always going to be the forces of the Yetzer Hara, the Satan, you know, evil forces that come to try to stop the goodness in this world. So if Mashiach was clearly being brought about from one generation to the next, so those people are going to be subject to the most difficult challenges of the Yetzer Hara. It's going to be the Satan will try to stop it from occurring, because the last thing Zahara wants is the Mashiach to come. However, if the Mashiach's seed is buried in garbage, as it were, then no one's going to pay attention to it. It's just garbage passing through. You know, why would I think this is creating Mashiach? So all these acts in history which are creating Mashiach, they came about in questionable ways, where the Yitzhara said, "I don't need to bother with that. What's that going to do? It's just an illegitimate relationship. It's incest. It's immoral. It's questionable. So that can't be bringing Mashiach about. So therefore, the force of evil lay off of it." So again, that's more of a Kabbalistic thought. We don't know practically how that would play out. But yet, when Hashem is bringing about, you know, the greatest of people into this world, who's supposed to lead us and bring us to our salvation, so he has to bring it about in somewhat, you know, underhanded ways or backdoor ways in order to avoid any sort of attention being given to it. So that's another explanation given. And both these things can be used with much more explanation as well. But in short, I think that explains, at least to some degree, how come it's these relationships that bring about Mashiach. So anyways, the pasuk here, though, is telling us that Rus and Boaz, that marriage would be on par with Yaakov and Rachel and Leah, in terms of building and restoring Klal Yisrael. And also on par with Tamar and Yehuda, whose relationship brings about Peretz, which is the one who's going to give birth to David Melech and Mashiach. Let's say it's the same line, same lineage. So Rus, we see, was very accepted. So at this point, you know, until now, you don't know how did the people view Rus. We knew they viewed Naomi as somebody who was a tragic case. They respected her, but they felt the tragedy she had to endure by the loss of her children and her husband and all of her money. Rus, initially when she came into Israel, people also rejected her. We mentioned last year how the other workers of Boaz tossed her out of the field. They tormented her. And at this point, we see the people really accepted her. The people turn towards Boaz and turn towards Rus, and they give her this bracha, which is, again, it's incredible bracha, which is equating her to the Imahos, and equating her to very great people. So why do people accept Rus in such a powerful way? What made them accept Rus? At what point they decide, no, we have to go with this? This woman's a very special woman. We're going to support her. We're going to praise her. We're going to bless her. So obviously, the fact that Boaz has accepted her is a big deal. Boaz, we know, again, is the Gadol Hador. Boaz is respected by all. Boaz is somebody who they look at as a sage, as an elder. And if he accepts Rus, they're going to follow along with him. But beyond that, there was a pasuk quoted earlier on in Megillas Rus, when Boaz first spoke to her. And Boaz said, I'll just read it if I can find it. He says, "Ata yadati ki ishes chayol at." He says, "Now ki yudea kol shar ami ki ishes chayol at." He says that everybody knows that you're an ishes chayol. Meaning, Rus didn't need Boaz at the end to confirm her greatness. The way Rus acted, her midos, her chesed, her modesty, her devotion, her self-sacrifice, that was recognized by all. People noticed that about her. So yes, having Boaz's stamp of approval is a very big thing for her. The Gadol Hador approves you. That's a pretty good confirmation. But ultimately, it wasn't the Gadol Hador approving her that did it. It was the fact that she was an Eishes Chayil. We know the Eishes Chayil is a term we apply to the greatest of Jewish women. And that term applied to her, you know, from the beginning. She's referred to as an Eishes Chayil. So because everybody recognized that, she stood alone in terms of her greatness. And at this point, when they see her marrying Boaz, it all makes sense. It fits together that a woman of this greatness, of this amount of devotion and self-sacrifice, should wed the Gadol Hador. That's an incredible thing. And everybody approved of this. I think an important lesson for us, which we miss out on sometimes, is that people at this point ignored her background. They ignored her status in terms of her wealth. They ignored the fact that she was a Moabite. They only saw her for her own personal virtue. And we should do this more often. Now, very often, we have impressions of people not based on their own personal merit, but based on other surrounding circumstances. Where they come from, what they dress like, how they talk, you know, who their siblings are, who their parents are, where they go to shul, where they send their kids to school. When we start judging people based on all these external points. But look at the person based on who they are. No, if they are somebody of virtue, then you should respect them. Rus is somebody that all the surrounding circumstances to her were negative. I mean, she'd intermarried before. No, she was the shiksa who married the Jewish boy. No one likes her. And you know, again, Moab was considered a nemesis of Klal Yisrael to the extent that the Torah prohibits Moabite converts from marrying into the Jewish people if they're male Moabite converts. So there was every right in terms of her situation. She was poor. She was a stranger from a foreign land. They shouldn't have accepted her. But because of her great virtue, they took her in. Eshes Chayalat. They saw she's Eshes Chayalat, they took her in. So I think for us, we have to know, we judge people based on their personal virtue, not based on any surrounding information or circumstances. The Pasuk also says here, about Rachel and Leah, it's an important point to make. It says, Asher banu shtehem es beis Yisrael. Who built up the house of Israel? Rachel and Leah. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say that Yaakov did, right? It's Rachel and Leah. And this is a point made that, you know, who's really responsible for building up the Jewish people? It's the women. It's the mothers and wives who are building the Jewish home. So it says that Rachel and Leah, they're the ones responsible for building up the 12 tribes. They're the ones responsible for building up Klal Yisrael. The same way, with Shavuos coming, it's a good time to speak about this. When the Jews first came to Har Sinai, and Hashem was giving Moshe a message to relay to the Jews, he said first, Kosumar Leves Yaakov. The first thing to do is go talk to the women. Get them on board. If the women aren't on board, then forget the men. Right? So you have to go speak. Right, it's absolutely true. So you have to go speak to the women first, and give them the message of Torah, the message of what it means to be a Jew. And once the women are on board with you, then go to the men, speak to the men afterwards. Because the ones who are truly the builders of Klal Yisrael, they'll be behind the scenes sometimes, is the women. So the Pasuk here is stressing that, Asher banu shtehem es Beis Yisrael. It's the two of them, it was Rachel and Leah that built up Beis Yisrael. But we see now, so people see the influence that Rus will have on history. They recognize that right now, that Rus is going to be influential for all of history. Let's go to verse 13. And so Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife, and he came to her. Hashem let her conceive, and she bore a son. So they get married, and she immediately conceives a child. And Chazal tell us that Boaz actually died that very night, so it was definitely an act of Hashkacha that she conceived right away. It's also pointed out that she was married originally to a Mahlon for I don't know how many years, but for a while they had no children.
10 years, no?
Is it 10 years?
Because they did not have children. And Rashi said that it was 10 years.
10 years. Okay, so let's say 10 years.
I'm not sure. Don't
test. I think they were in Moab for 10 years. I don't know if they were married for 10 years. I don't remember. It could be 10 years. It was a considerable amount of time, and she had no children yet. And Chazal tell us that she actually wasn't capable of bearing children. So we see she didn't have any from her first marriage. And Chazal tell us that she was initially an Akara. She was a woman who didn't have the capacity to bear children. And now, miraculously, when she married Boaz, she became pregnant. So we see again the Hashkacha. Hashem wanted this relationship to result in a child. Boaz, the fact he acted so quickly was part of the miracle here, because if he had stalled even one more day, then he could have been gone. And ultimately, this one day they had together resulted in the birth of King David's grandfather. And that's what it resulted in. Which brings to the question in general, we see another similarity between Rus and the Imahos. The Imahos as well couldn't have children initially. You find that Sarah can have children, Rivka, and Rachel. We don't find that about Leah necessarily. But Sarah, Rivka, and Rachel, none of them could have children initially. And then it happened through a miracle, they were able to conceive. Rus was the same way. And the question is asked, why is it that Hashem had it that these great women initially could not have children, and they had to actually only conceive miraculously? Why is it that way? So one answer given is that the children born of the Imahos, they weren't born naturally, they were born miraculously as a result of their merits, of their tefillos, and through a miracle. Because the formation of the Jewish people comes about not through natural means, but through miraculous means. Meaning if Sarah just had a child naturally, so then the Jews would be created naturally. But we're above that. We're supernatural. We're a nation that shouldn't exist in many ways. Whether it be from Sarah, from Rivka, or from Rachel, whether it be from years of persecution and suffering, we shouldn't be here. But the existence of Klal Yisrael from the very start, now Mitzis Mitzrayim, everything about us was miraculous. So the very origins of Klal Yisrael are miraculous origins. It had to be that way. So Sarah could not have, she didn't have the physical ability to have children. She lived a life of great merit. She davened to Hashem, and when she was an older woman, she was given the miraculous ability to have children. Similarly, Rivka couldn't have children. She had to daven for it. Rachel had to daven for it. And Rus. Rus could not have children. And based on her merits, you know, based on her virtues, she was able to then have children later on in her life. I don't know how old she is right now, but later on in her life, only with her second marriage. And it's because the Jewish people are above the world. We're not natural, we're supernatural. We're created in a supernatural way, and we live in a supernatural way. So besides the people as a whole, so too with our Malchus, our dynasty. David HaMelech came about in a supernatural way. Based on natural circumstances, he wouldn't have been born. But because of this hashkacha, because of the way which these events came together as one, and because of the nais that Rus could bear a child, David HaMelech was created. So we see the same idea that we compared her in the previous pasuk to the Imahos, to Rachel and Leah. Rus keeps getting compared to Imahos in other ways as well. But she had that status, and miracles occurred to her, similar to what occurred to Sarah, Rivka, and Rachel. Look at verse 14. And the women said to Naomi, "Blessed be Hashem who has not left you without a redeemer today. May his name be famous in Israel." So all the women, I guess, who were gathered around, once Rus gave birth, they all gave a bracha to Naomi. And we're going to see that this child is viewed not only as a child of Rus, but a child of Naomi. This is Naomi, not to carry on Naomi's virtues, this is carrying Naomi's, her destinies through this child. So the people saw the Yad Hashem, the hand of God in the story, and they recognized it through this bracha. And then they said that this person, in the pasuk it says, "Ve'ikare shmo b'Yisrael," his name will be called amongst Israel. And the translation says, "May his name be famous in Israel." Meaning that he's going to be a person of note. Your child is going to be somebody who is well known, who is famous, who goes down in history. And people understood, how they know that right now? It's because when you see a miracle occur, it's never for no reason. When something like this happens, and Rus has a child against all odds, from the beginning to the end, everything was miraculous. Therefore, that child's going to be a significant person. Because why would Hashem do miracles for no reason at all? And we have to recognize that when things happen which seem supernatural, it's being done for a reason. Many of us have heard stories, I've heard it from many different people, people who survived the Holocaust. Many of them came out and said, "If Hashem plucked me out of the flames, it must be for a purpose. I have to use my life properly because of that reason." You see, if you survive based on a miracle, the miracle is not for no reason. Hashem wants you to do something with your life. So people understood, if Rus had a child by means of a miracle, it must be this child's going to be somebody significant. Because else, why would Hashem go through this, as it were, for no reason? So you find people to this very day, survivors, who tell you that when I survived, I knew that Hashem wanted me to get out there and do something meaningful with the rest of my life. Because else I would have been in the flames with the rest of them. So the people, the women around recognized this and they expressed this. And they knew this child was going to be a great person. Verse 15, next page, 1273. "He will become your life restorer and sustain your old age. For your daughter-in-law who loves you has borne him, and she is better to you than seven sons." So now they're consoling Naomi. And Naomi, on her own right, could still be very down and depressed. I mean, her own husband and her own children died. This is just her daughter-in-law, who luckily wasn't really related to her because she wasn't even Jewish at the time when she was married to her son. And Naomi could have said, "Well, I mean, it's very nice that Rus is going to establish a family. Where does that leave me? I've lost everything, and I still have lost everything. I'm no longer as wealthy as I used to be, and I don't have any children, I don't have a husband." And I know she could have died in disgrace. But people went to her and said, "No, Naomi, recognize that your spirit should be revived. This child, even though maybe there's no physical connection, it doesn't bear your genes, but yet this child still belongs to you. And it's because of your deeds, your merit, your encouragement, your support, that Rus was able to unite with Boaz and have a child. That all came from you." So they said, "Told Naomi, this is going to be your life restorer. You can get back on track now. No longer be depressed, no longer sit there in your misery from the past. Realize what Hashem is doing for you. Hashem is giving you a second chance. And Hashem is allowed, this child will carry on your family and your legacy despite the fact that you've lost your children, lost your husband." It's a very powerful message to us, which is never give up. Hashem is powerful, and never despair. Again, Nami here was an older lady, and she lost all. You know, it's hard to recognize what she went through. And we compared her last year to another Eov, very similar to Eov, a female version of Eov. Everything is gone. But yet, having this child through Rus, to her, is a meshiv nefesh, someone who's going to restore her power, restore her hope, restore her cheer, and give her a very, very productive and fulfilling old age. And that's the way the women spoke to Naomi. This idea is better to you than seven sons. I'm not sure why seven sons is the analogy given. Many commentaries say that seven just means like a lot of sons. This child is better for you than having many, many other children. I'm not sure why seven is chosen. This is an interesting thing, why seven is chosen here. Let's see, verse 16. So Naomi took the child and held it in her bosom, and she became his nurse. So Naomi actually raised the child. She became like the nanny to this child. She took care of the child. Naomi, it sounds like, just from the order of the psukim, that at first she was hesitant. You know, like, what should my relationship be with the child? And then once the ladies gave her this bracha, once the ladies said, no, this child is going to restore your good hope, it's going to restore your life to you, she then took the child in and became the child's caretaker. So that was verse 16. And it really did soothe Naomi. It soothed her pain. It filled that void. She had a major, major void, if you can imagine, based on her previous experiences. And this child was able to soothe her pain, fill the void in her life. Verse 17. The neighborhood women gave him a name. So you want to know how to name your child, just ask the ladies around the street what they think, you know? The women gave a name, saying, a son is born to Naomi, and they named him Oved. He was the father of Jesse, of Yishai, and the father of David. So this child was the grandfather of David HaMelech, the father of Yishai, David's father. So why they name him Oved? So there's two. One thing we see here is interesting. It says the neighborhood women named the child, which to us, again, like I mentioned before, is like kind of weird. Like, I don't name my kid, I'm not going to ask all the ladies down the street, what do you think we should name the kid, you know? That doesn't really quite fit. But you do see the intuition of the ladies around was valued and was right on target. I mean, the past few verses, I mean, this whole chapter focuses a lot on the bystanders. Mm-hmm. What are they saying? They gave this bracha, these words of encouragement, and they named the child. I mean, overall, it was very important to Boaz and to Rus how people viewed this child, because again, it was the whole relationship was questionable. So they wanted everybody to always be there to support and to affirm they feel it's a legitimate child. That's number one. Also, the intuition of the ladies around was valued and was taken for history. Now, they seemed to have an insight into this child because they were watching the whole story. People understood where Rus came from, what Rus did, and where she was going. And because they had that intuition, they could give a proper name to the child, which really depicted what the child's all about. Sometimes you need somebody who actually sees all parts of the story to bring it all together as one, and then summarize it for you. Now, if you're involved in it, you can miss pieces also. Now, if you go through, you know, over a course of 2 years, this whole course of events. So often you might need a friend to come say, wait a minute, look what happened to you. Remember 2 years ago? And then it all comes together as one. So in some sense, the neighborhood ladies are watching what's happening from the start. And they're able to see the miraculous turn of events which occurred here and bring it all together and say, look, this all resulted in this child. This child is the sum total of Rus's devotion, Rus's chesed, Rus's self-sacrifice, and Boaz's great righteousness, and this child is the result of it all. So they call this child Oved. Now what does Oved mean? Oved means literally like a servant. Eved Hashem. Oved is a worker, a servant. And his name was Oved. So the Medrash says that he was called based on three different things. Al Shem Aviv. He was called Oved based on his father. He was called Oved based on his mother. And called Oved based on the fact that he will be the grandfather of David HaMelech. So three great people which we're describing through the word Oved. So why is that? So his mother, Rus, we know she was a great Oved Elokim, a great servant of God. Ovedes Elokim, servant of God. There's a pasuk in Sefer Malachi which says, V'shaftem r'isim. You should go and look. Bein tzaddik l'rasha. Well, what is the difference between a tzaddik and a rasha? Bein oved elokim, bein one who serves Hashem, l'asher lo avado, to one who doesn't serve Hashem. And the rabbis tell us that when the pasuk is distinguishing between a servant of Hashem and someone who does not serve Hashem, this can be described by Rus and Orpah. Rus and Orpah are two very similar people. They were sisters in the beginning, back in the first parak of Megillas Rus, in the first chapter, and they split. Rus became a servant of Hashem, and Orpah went the other way. But the truth is, a servant of Hashem, and one doesn't serve Hashem, Chazal tell us even the difference between doing one extra act. One example that the rabbis give, they say, what's a servant of Hashem and what's not? If you review a piece of Torah 100 times, you didn't serve Hashem. 101 times, you served Hashem. I mean, the numbers themselves are not necessarily significant, but the idea is when you go above and beyond, that one extra step, until that point, you're doing what you're supposed to do, but to really be a servant, to really say, I'm putting forth extra special effort to serve God, it means you went the extra mile, you went the extra step. Rus is somebody who clearly went the extra mile, she took the extra step to serve Hashem, and therefore Oved is based on her. Oved's based on Boaz. Boaz also did all he could to serve Hashem. He didn't act for personal gain. He risked his reputation. At the end of his life, you know, he could have said, I'm retired and I'm going to go and enjoy myself. Instead, he kept there supporting and caring for Klal Yisrael, taking care of this young Moabite convert. Boaz was a true servant of Hashem, so his child was called Oved. And then King David, David HaMelech, so he also is referred to as an Eved Hashem. David, it says, Vayivchar b'David Avdi, Avdo. So Hashem chose David, his servant. So David's called a servant of Hashem as well. And David's somebody who we also see in his lifetime, he sacrificed very much to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to serve Hashem properly. So therefore the child becomes Oved because he's really supposed to be an epitome of true Avodas Hashem, true devotion and commitment to serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The title in our minds of Eved or servant usually carries a negative connotation. But if you notice, Shabbos morning in davening, in Shacharis, we say, Yismach Moshe b'matnas chelko, ki Eved ne'eman kara solo. Moshe Rabbeinu's greatest pride and joy was that he was called an Eved of Hashem. That's what we say in davening. Because for a Jew, that's our goal. Our goal is that I should be totally devoted to Hashem at all times. And it's an Eved Hashem, a servant of Hashem, means that I put aside my needs for the needs of God. So Moshe Rabbeinu gets the special title, he's an Eved Hashem. And so does David HaMelech. It's a title that very few really merit, because most of us, you know, usually take care of our own needs, in addition to doing what Hashem wants us to do as well. But to be totally devoted to Hashem 24/7, that's an Eved Hashem, and that's a title granted to the greatest of tzaddikim. So Oved is supposed to symbolize that, and hopefully actualize that. David HaMelech gets that title, and Moshe gets that title. Additionally, Mashiach, who's going to be the descendant of Oved, he's also referred to in the Navi many times as Avdi, as my servant. Because the family of Malchus, the kings of the Jewish people, they're supposed to be the servants of Hashem. Very different, we spoke about this I think a few months back, very different than non-Jewish kings. Non-Jewish kings, very often they're serving themselves. They're looking for their own personal gain, they're enjoying their power. And don't get me wrong, you know, corrupt Jewish kings do the same thing. But the vision of Malchus, what is the true Jewish king? He's an Eved Hashem. He's somebody who is totally devoted to serving Hashem and not in it for personal gain at all. Not looking for his own personal advancement, power, money. He's just there to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu properly. David was an example of that. He was the essence of that. And that's truly the essence of a real king amongst the Jews. And the essence of Mashiach. Mashiach is supposed to be Avdi. I'm going to send you my servant, the Mashiach, to redeem you. So Oved, his name itself in our minds, at first is funny. He's called servant. But his name represents so much about who he is and what he's supposed to bring the world towards. He's representing the values of his mother, of his father. He is, I guess, foreshadowing the greatness of his grandson and foreshadowing the greatness of Mashiach. And all in this one person named Oved. Let's see a little bit further. Let's read verse 18. Now these are the generations of Peretz. Peretz begot Chetzron, and Chetzron begot Ram, and Ram begot Aminadav, and Aminadav begot Nachshon, Nachshon begot Salma, and Salmon begot Boaz, and Boaz begot Oved, and Oved begot Jesse, and Jesse begot David. So the last four verses of Rus are the lineage of David and Melech. Starting way back, Peretz was the son of Yehuda.
That's five.
So, thank you. So Peretz is the son of Yehuda. And descending from Yehuda came these generations until you get to David HaMelech. In the simple meaning of the verses, why does it do this? Because the purpose of Megillas Rus on the surface level is just to show us the roots of King David. That's the purpose of it all. Whether it be due to the controversy which was there, and whether it be to understand the great roots of our great king, either way you look at it, the purpose of this sefer, the reason it was composed, it was written by Shmuel Hanavi. And the reason Shmuel wrote it was to order to show us the origins of King David. That was the point of it all. So very appropriately, the book ends by going through the lineage. Starting from Peretz, going all the way through David, we see how David came about. In this list, you have great people. You know, we know Nachshon is the famous Nachshon ben Aminadav, who entered into the Yamsu first. Boaz, Ovid, we spoke about. Yishai was considered a perfect specimen. Yishai is one person who never sinned in his lifetime. The Gemara lists there are four people who lived who never sinned. And only died because human beings have to die. But he didn't deserve any punishment, didn't deserve death. And one of them was Yishai, was Jesse. So, and then that all brought about King David. So this really sums up the purpose of the book. I want to make, I guess, two closing points. I think maybe we'll get one this week, maybe one next week. It's because it's too long for this week. So again, now we've seen the entire Sefer Rus. And we've seen that there really is a lot of incredible lessons found in the Sefer. But ultimately, the goal of Sefer Rus, of Megillas Rus, is to teach us the origins of David HaMelech, like we said, to figure out what's David HaMelech all about. Where is he coming from? What made him who he was? So this is very much alluded to in a pasuk. It says, Matsasi David Avdi. Hashem says, I found my servant David. And the rabbis tell us, David was like, he was like a metziah. He was found. Meaning, like we said before, in so many unexpected ways, David came about. In ways that were very surprising. In ways, you know, it says, the Chazal tell us, where did you find David? I found him in Sodom. Because that's where Lot was when he came out and had a child with his daughter. He began in Sodom. So in the worst of all places in the entire world, the only city in history that had to be totally overturned and destroyed, that was the first spark of David HaMelech. And it's because we're trying to bring about Mashiach and trying to bring about the Malchus, the kingship of Klal Yisrael, and this person has to lead the world to perfection. The recipe for such a person, it's a recipe. You know, there's a lot of different people involved, a lot of generations, a lot of stories. But the recipe to make King David had to have a certain blend. You know, you have a half cup of sugar and a cup of flour and some baking. You have to have the right blend to make the recipe. And the recipe for David came about in very, very specific ways. Sometimes very surprising. But it's because Hashem knew how to create the recipe for Mashiach. That's what Hashem's trying to do. So it requires a Tamar, it requires a Yisha, it requires Sodom, it requires Rus, it requires Boaz. There's a lot of ingredients in this recipe. But all these situations and people together create the human being that will become David HaMelech. It's said, I don't know the source of this, but the word Adam is a contraction, or Rosh Yitevos, it's the words Aleph, Dal, and Mem, Adam, David, Mashiach. Because really that's the line. Adam was created as the perfect human being. He failed. So now it's up to David, leading to Mashiach, to bring that back to the world once again. So the human being really is represented by these three individuals. Adam, David, and Mashiach. This is even brought out based on the words of Chazal, that it's a famous medrash, that Adam foresaw through Nevuah that there was an neshama, a soul, that wasn't going to make it. And Adam said, I want to give this soul life. So Adam gave 70 years to that soul, which was David HaMelech's soul. So Adam lived to 930. Adam should have lived to 1,000. But he lived to 930 because he gave up 70 of his own years to David HaMelech. What that means exactly, you know, I don't know if we really know. But what it does tell us is that David HaMelech is considered a continuation of Adam's lifetime. Now, Adam lived to 930. And David took up the last 70 years of Adam's lifetime to live his lifetime. So Adam gave part of a lifetime to David so David could live in this world and become who he was. So that led to David, that led to Mashiach. So really there's one continuous line taking us from Adam HaRishon, the very first human being, to David and to Mashiach, and they all fit together. And the point being that Adam, David, and Mashiach are all supposed to be model human beings who through their persona, through who they are and what they do and the way that they inspire and interact with people and serve Hashem, they're supposed to bring the world to a changed state. But he contains so many elements of the world because of that, like we said before. David has to have within him so many pieces, because if he doesn't have those pieces within, he can't inspire everybody. And David's job was to inspire everybody. So Matzasi David Avi, I found David where? I found him in Sodom. I found him in Tamar and Yehuda, and I found him in Rus, and I found him in Bathsheba, and then I found him in, you know, in all these things. And Hashem had to orchestrate all the pieces to come together as one. So, you know, the daughters of Lot, for instance, the daughters of Lot, when they conceived the child with their father, they had good intent. They didn't want to be incestual people. I'm sure they felt terrible about it. You know, we even have sources for such things. But they wanted to have the world continue. They're trying to make sure the world existed. So they're trying to do Hashem's bidding in some way. So they may have been wrong what they did, but they were sacrificing of their own personal sense of right and wrong and morality to keep the world going. They did an act which they felt was naturally abhorrent. It was disgusting to them, I'm sure. But they did it for a good purpose. And that brought about also David HaMelech, because that leads to Mashiach. They wanted to keep the world going, and Mashiach perfects the world. And every single relationship along the way was trying to reach, you know, that point. Rus is referred to as the Eim HaMalchus, the mother of the king, the mother of the kingship, mother of the kingdom. She was selfless, she had self-sacrifice, she had faith in Hashem, she was modest, she dropped everything for the truth. This is true Malchus. A true king is somebody who has all of those different qualities. Humility, kindness, devotion, compassion, and total loyalty to truth. And that's what Rus had. Because of that, she deserves to be the mother of Malchus. She's the Eim HaMalchus. This is the story of Rus, and really the story of Rus is teaching us the creation of the Jewish Malchus and of the Mashiach. And if you put the whole book together, you see that kind of popping out at you, and why this is the woman who merited so much. So we'll stop with it here. Next week I'll show one more point about Sefer Rus, I think, and then we'll move on to other Shavuos topics.